Hello, everyone. This is a recording for Founders Friday. My name is Pippa Aitken. I'm a solicitor at Sintons LLP on Barrett Road in Newcastle upon Tyne. I work in the commercial department and specialise in intellectual property. So I've been asked today just to give you an overview of intellectual property and particularly intellectual property as an asset. So we'll just move on to my first slide. So these are some statements that I often come across, and we'll just take a minute or so to go through them. I'm not going to give you the answers yet, I'll do that at the end. So I cannot formally register copyright in the UK, is that true or false? TM means a trademark is registered in the UK. I've protected the name of my business because I've registered the name at Companies House. I've paid for a company to design a logo for my business, so I own that design. So are they true or false? And we'll come, hopefully I will tell you during the course of this presentation and come back to the end, at the end with the answers. So whether you're just starting a business or already running one, IP should be part of your business plan. Every day businesses build up goodwill and recognition linked to their product, brand or service. And this value builds up over time and is strongly linked to your IP assets. So it's important that you identify them early in your business plan. So firstly, you need to identify what actually intellectual property you have and understand the difference between all the different rights. And on this slide, I've just set out the main types of intellectual property rights you might come across. On the left-hand side, there are unregistered rights, which are copyright, unregistered trademarks, unregistered designs, and confidential information. And on the right-hand side are registered rights, patents, trademarks, and registered designs. And I'm going to talk a bit more about the common intellectual property rights, the ones that I deal with mostly, which are copyright, registered designs, patents, and trademarks. So we'll start with copyright. So there's no requirement in this country like there is in the US to register copyright with any library or registry. If the work satisfies the requirements as to originality, then it will automatically gain copyright protection as soon as it is recorded, either on paper or in electronic form. Copyright subsists in literary works, so written text, dramatic, musical, artistic works such as photographs or graphics, films, sound recordings and broadcasts. The most important thing for you when you're creating copyright work is to keep records of that work so you can identify who created them and when it was created. You can use the copyright statement, which is the C in the circle, the date of creation and the name of owner. It's not a legal requirement to put the statement on your records, but it is a good indication of when it was created and who by. You can also bundle your copyright works up in an envelope and post them, registered post to yourself. And when you receive them, don't open them. And this is a good indication, again, of a time and a date that you created these works. And this is all to prove that if someone comes along at a later stage and says, actually, I created that first, you can prove that you created it first. So copyright protects the expression of an idea and not the idea itself. So two people can have very similar ideas, but until it's expressed in writing, it won't be protected. And a good example of this was the authors of Holy Blood and Holy Grail sued Dan Brown's publishers for copyright infringement. They claimed that the central framework of their plot had been stolen for the writing of the Da Vinci Code. But the court dismissed the claim and said that borrowing of abstract ideas will not infringe. So it has to be actually copying some written work or some other type of copyright work and a substantial part of that work and not just taking the idea from it. Registered designs. In the UK, you can have unregistered designs and registered designs. Now, if you have a design, you should try and register it at the UK Intellectual Property Office. And this would last for a period of 5 years. It protects the appearance of a product, but not the way it works. So it's just the look of it, and it must have eye appeal. And this is judged by the customer rather than the designer. It can include packaging, get-up, graphics, two-dimensional designs such as surface pattern, which is, you know, something such as wallpaper, logos, software, icons. And for it to be registrable, the design must be new. It mustn't have been disclosed in the public before. Now, this is slightly different to patents, which I'll come on to in a bit, but the Intellectual Property Office actually gives you a priority period of 12 months in which to file your design. So you can go to an exhibition or a show and showcase your design, and you have a period of 12 months from which the date which it was disclosed to the public to the date of filing your design. It also must have individual character. So moving on to patents, just some funny patents that have been tried to be registered previously, some of which I think are very, very good. Patents are registrable in the UK at the UK Intellectual Property Office, but you can expand to other territories worldwide. So what can be patented? Well, the patented can be granted for an invention. An invention will either be a product or a process and includes things that, such as mechanical devices and chemical compounds. It has to have an inventive step, and it will be taken to involve an inventive step if it's not obvious to a person working in the same field. It doesn't need to be a massive advance in scientific knowledge. It could be a small but original solution to a practical problem. Again, like designs, it needs to be new, but in this respect, in patents, it really must not have been disclosed anywhere else before. So if you're going to talk to friends or potential investors about your idea, don't talk to anyone without an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, being signed. Otherwise, you might find that if you disclose your patent out into the public, it becomes part of what's called the prior art, which might scupper your patent application. It's also got to be capable of industrial application, which really just means anything that can be used in any kind of industry. Just to give you an example of a prior art, an application was made to the IPO for a doggy doorbell. Now, this was refused by the IPO because they said in 1981 there was a copy of the Beano which said, you can't read it because it's so small, but it says, look at the clever trick he's learned to get in the house. And this became part of the prior art and was not, the doggy doorbell was not allowed. So you've got to be very careful when disclosing your patent to others or your idea. So I'm going to move on to trademarks, which is effectively branding. The legal definition of a trademark is a sign or symbol used by a trader to distinguish its products or services from those of other traders. Again, trademarks, like designs, can be registered or they can be unregistered. You've got to be very careful of using the correct symbols, because the only people that are allowed to use the R in the circle are those with registered trademarks. The TM can be used on registered or unregistered trademarks, but just by seeing a TM doesn't necessarily mean that a trademark is registered. It would be the R in the circle that means it's registered. You can register trademarks in the UK at the UK IPO. In the EU, at the EU IPO, which obviously now excludes the UK post-Brexit, or you can make a single application to the WIPO, which is the World Intellectual Property Organization, and you make a single application with a single fee, and you can register it in a number of countries across the world, which can be quite a cost-effective way of registering it in a few different countries if you're looking outside the EU or the UK. So trademarks, what's their purpose? Well, stop others trading off your goodwill, can avoid confusion in the marketplace with others, preserves reputation for quality associated with the mark. And above all, it's a valuable asset and one that you can actually end up selling for value or giving someone else permission to use. And I'll come on to that in a little bit. They can be brand names, house marks, logos, your trading style or getup. They can be even shapes, the Coca-Cola bottle was registered, or colours, such as the Dairy Milk purple colour, which is very well known for obviously for a chocolate. It can be sounds, and the Intel registered their sound for their computers, and it can be slogans. The most important thing that I could probably tell you in this presentation with regards to trademarks is to do your clearance searches, particularly if you're thinking of a new brand name for your service or your product or your company name. Make sure no one else is using something similar or identical to you. The most important place to look is at on the trademark registers. Check that no one else has an identical or similar trademark. You could always check Companies House as well, because it's a good indication if someone has the same company name as you, they might be doing the same thing. Although it is a good indication, they still might have a different trading name or a different product under their company name. So it's not conclusive. And certainly Companies House will not knock it out if it is similar to another name. Google, I mean, just by doing a Google search, the first page will tell you immediately whether there's any online presence of anything similar. Domain names, check if you can get your domain name you want, and also it'll give you a good indication of who else has got similar domain names or the same domain names in different .co.uk or .com. And then check also Facebook and social media sites. So the reason you do this is to try and avoid conflict at a later stage. You don't want to have started trading and 2 years down the line, someone else approach you and say, actually, you're using a very similar name to us. You've got to withdraw your products and pay us a lot of money. You've spent a lot of money on marketing your trademark and you've built up a lot of goodwill. You don't want to be prevented from using it later down the line. So a very well-known case that you'll all be aware of recently is Marks & Spencer's, who launched a legal action against Aldi, claiming that its Cuthbert the Caterpillar cake infringed its Colin the Caterpillar cake. So Colin the Caterpillar is actually a registered trademark of M&S, and they can bring an action for infringement to anyone else who attempts to use that trademark or use anything similar to that trademark. The central issue in this case is whether Aldi's product is close enough to cause confusion amongst customers, and that incorrect assumptions could be made that it originates from or is connected to M&S. So the judgment will have significant ramifications for retailers generally. If M&S is successful, the court will award M&S substantial damages, as well as ordering all Cuthberts to be removed from the shelves. If Aldi is successful, not only will it be a significant PR win for Aldi, it will also offer a fascinating insight into the court's interpretation of trademark disputes relating to food. Not to mention the fact that Colin and Cuthbert will have to be, will forced to be coexisting peacefully moving forward. But in the meantime, we can watch the quite amusing tweets come in about this case. So once we've identified what IP we actually have, how do you maximize the value from it? Well, as I mentioned before, with trademarks, you can sell it or you can give permission to someone else to use it. A legal term, which you may have heard, is an assignment. An assignment is effectively a sale or a purchase if you're a purchaser. And the inventor will give up all their interests and right to use the IP. Usually you get a lump sum paid up front and you'll have no continuing obligations with regards to the IP. Or you might want to give someone a permission to use your IP, and that will be by way of a license. And this way you continue to be involved in the development of the IP or the sale of it. You retain some security of ownership. You might want a regular royalty income. This is usually suitable where you may not have the resources or the expertise to fully exploit your IP. So you might like to get someone in to help you with the development of it or the sale of it. There are different types of license. There is an exclusive license, a sole license, and a non-exclusive license. And it's really important when you're negotiating with a licensee to come to an agreement as to what type of license this is going to be. Obviously, an exclusive license means that the licensee can use that IP exclusively. You as a licensor would not be able to use it, nor would you be able to license it to anyone else. So exclusive licenses are very valuable to a licensee. It could be a sole license, in which case the licensee can use the IP, but you also retain some rights so you can use it yourself, but not be able to grant licenses to anyone else. And then there is a non-exclusive license where you as a licensor is free to use the IP and your license, and you can license it to other people as well. So the scope of a license, generally it's a legal document, and you would usually get the help of a legal advisor to draft this, but just some things to watch out for when you're perhaps negotiating with a licensee or a licensor. Obviously, you've got to get the grant right. What type of license are you going to choose? You might want to limit it to a certain territory. This might be the UK, or it might be other countries throughout the world. You might want to confine it to internal business use or a field of use. For example, you might want to give an exclusive license to one licensee for use of the IP to manufacture food, but to another to manufacture clothing. And as a customer, you might not want, or as a licensee, you might not want to feel too tied into that. So there will be some negotiation around what can you use that IP for. As a supplier, might you want to know the identity of your customer? You might not want the licensee to sub-license to others, or if they can sublicense, under what conditions and what contract terms can they sublicense to? And the same with subcontracting. How are you going to get paid? As I mentioned before, do you want it as an ongoing royalty, which is usually a percentage of net sales? Or would you like an upfront payment or an annual payment? You need to talk through how long the license is going to last. Will it be the life of the contract, or will it last beyond that? You may have heard the word perpetual license. And a perpetual license usually lasts forever. But do you actually mean that? What if the licensee breaches the term of the agreement? Would you want to get that license back from them if they've done something so wrong that you want to license it to someone else, for example? If you do, as a licensee, really want a license that goes on beyond the term of the contract and it can't be terminated, you're then looking at an irrevocable license. So you need to negotiate that with the licensor. I'm going to briefly talk about ownership, because this is where a lot of disputes arise after the event, and it's where people might not have thought it through properly, because it doesn't follow an obvious path. it's really important to determine who the owner is or who will be the owner. And it can vary depending on the IP right. But generally, whoever creates the work will be the first owner of the work. An exception to this is someone who might create an IP work during their employment. And in that case, the employer would be the first owner. Commissioned works often trip people up because they think if they've paid for something, they will automatically get the rights to it. And that's not the case. Copyright would vest in the creator and not the commissioner. So, for example, if a graphic designer designed a logo for your website or some new branding for you, and you've paid them for that work, they will own the copyright. And what you need is a legal document, which is called an assignment, which we talked about earlier. An assignment of IP will transfer the legal ownership of that IP to you, the commissioner. Joint ownership, this is something I would always try and advise that you avoid. It can cause problems later on down the line. I mean, it depends what the IP is and it depends on the jurisdiction, but certainly in the UK and with copyright, you can't use copyright without the consent of all your co-owners. It may be that not all parties need to own equal shares in the copyright work or whatever the IP work is. It may be that you can negotiate it so one party owns the IP and licenses it to the other parties to use it for the purposes they want to use it for. And as long as that license is sufficiently wide enough for the licensee, that should be better than trying to have a joint ownership work where you're tied to each other for the rest of the copyright life. So this is just a classic case of where things can get out of hand. This is Naruto, and Naruto managed to take a selfie using David Slater's camera. And there was an argument, obviously, as to who owns that copyright. PETA, who is an animal charity, or PETA, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, tried to argue that Naruto owned the copyright in the photograph, and they took Mr. Slater to court in America. They argued that Mr. Slater should pay Naruto for using his picture. The court eventually saw sense and decided that animals couldn't legally own copyright. So I'm going to come back to these statements. Hopefully I've covered them all and you're reasonably comfortable with them now. So I cannot formally register copyright in the UK. That's true. There's no register to register it to. So it arises automatically as long as it's original. And all you need to prove is that you created it first. TM means that trademark is registered. Well, no, it doesn't. The R in the circle means that a trademark is registered. TM, some people say, means totally meaningless. It doesn't actually mean too much other than you are using the trademark. I have protected the name of my business because I've registered the name at Company's House. And I sometimes get this and people say, well, we've registered a limited company, so we've got the name. But you still have to go one step further and actually try and obtain a trademark or at least do your trademark clearance searches to check no one else is using that. I've paid for a company to design a logo for my business, so I own that design. And we've just been through that. So again, that's false. Even if you've paid for a company to design a logo for you, you still need a document legally transferring that to you. So I hope you've enjoyed my whistle-stop tour of IP. Obviously, if there's any questions, please come to our website and my contact details are on there and you can get in touch with me. Okay, thank you.